Follow the White Rabbit is a game that will teach you practical politics. Practical politics is called practical politics because it is non-voting, which makes it very, very practical. Conventional politics is, of course, rule-based politics, which is what you do at the voting booth. It's very, very rule-based and timeline-based, you know, every 4 years, every 2 years, so on and so forth. And full-spectrum practical politics is engaging and taking out an opponent or a system or a corporation, so on and so forth, by any means necessary under the rules or under the laws, but never breaking the rules or never breaking the laws. But to understand anything, we first have to teach you practical politics, which is non-voting politics. The first basics are the art of staying on point or using a talking point and being able to say it over and over again to make your point, not arguing, just making a point. But this is an introduction, again, to Follow the White Rabbit, and Follow the White Rabbit is a game that will teach you practical politics.
In the previous Follow the White Rabbit, I talked about Charles Martel. And I talked about with White Rabbits, you have to hit the gates of Vienna. Well, obviously, Charles Martel, he didn't live to be 900 years old. So at the beginning of this one, these next two are going to be question and answers, because I got a bunch of question and answers to catch up on. And this is the way I do it. I answer it live because I don't like typing a bunch of stuff and someone else may have the same question and learn from it. So it kills two birds with one stone, and it allows me to talk to a broader audience at the same time, that type of thing, or to answer the question in front of a broader audience. But I talked about Charles Martel. I talked about with the White Rabbits, you have to hit the gates of Vienna. It takes a whole lot to make them upset, and that's kind of what you see is what you get. It's right in front of our faces every day. But I didn't mean to equate Charles Martel with the gates of Vienna, because of course he wasn't 900 years old. He was at the gates of Paris. But the point is still the same. Charles Martel was 40-some years old, and for the previous 23 years up until the Battle of Tours, you had Muslims coming into Europe, and they were taking over, Visigoth, Christian areas all over Europe, especially in the Iberian Peninsula, Spain and whatnot, or somewhere. And they made it all the way up to Burgundy, France. But they had spent 23 years there. The Battle of Tours was a similar type of equation. The Muslims came in and they kept coming in, and the Habsburg let it slide, or maybe they didn't have a lot going on, or maybe they were lazy. I don't know. But Charles Martel, you know, for 23 years of this guy's life, for half this guy's life, the Muslims did nothing but take land, and then they got to Burgundy, France, all the way to Burgundy, France. I mean, they're all the way up in Burgundy. And they got up there, and he just lights them up at the Battle of Tours and kicks them out of there. The point I'm trying to make is you got to hit that. It takes a lot to get them upset. And, you know, we're dealing with a very big contradiction when you come with the White Rabbit. It is a paradox, but it is a contradiction that nonetheless true. It's a contradiction that flies in the face of natural law. You have a rabbit that makes radical progress. It's very easy to study other rabbits because they don't make a lot of progress. When they do, it's landmark. They write books about Muslim progress, but whenever you look deeper, it's usually for other reasons. But white rabbits are very difficult because we make radical progress. Over any 10-year period, over the past 200-300 years, we've made some radical progress. The last 100 years, it's a joke. So actually studying us becomes very, very difficult because, you know, we engage, our natural behavior is by nature risky. I'm going to repeat that. Our natural behavior is by nature risky. So when asked, why do they let things go to the edge? Well, I have a relative that was a Green Beret. He's an old guy. He's an uncle. And he was talking about, I don't know what war it was. I want to say it was a Korean War or something like that. But he was a Green Beret or whatever it was, one of the first guys to start paratroopers. There weren't a lot of paratroopers, and they had up paratroopers. And I started thinking about that because you know, he's an old guy, and most of his unit or whatever that jumped out of the plane that day got killed. He was one of two or three survivors. He's a Green Beret. Or I want to say he was a Green Beret or became a Green Beret after that or something like that. But you understand my point. He's a military guy, jumped out of a plane in one of these old wars and got shot all to death. and he was one of only three that survived in his whole entire, whoever jumped out that day in his particular platoon or whatever. Unit, I think is right word, but it started getting me thinking. You know, you have a rabbit on this planet, a white rabbit, that decides it's going to fly. It's, you know, this whole idea in itself is risky. You're going to fly. Well, how are you going to fly? Well, we're going to invent a plane. It's not enough for this rabbit to invent a plane, then to be flying in the plane. They're going to take another risky. They're going to do something else. They invent a parachute because a parachute, in case the plane goes down, you got to jump out. So they bring out an 18th century invention. I think that's where the parachute was invented, and they remodify it for a plane. They got themselves a little chute. You know, if the plane goes down, you can jump out of the plane with your chute on. You know, it's a safety feature. But then they go one step beyond that. Well, they start using the safety feature to jump out of a plane. You know, it's not enough to want to fly. It's not enough to be flying through the air at a few hundred miles an hour or whatever. You're going to start jumping out of it with a parachute on. You know, to most of the animal kingdom, we do ridiculous things and get away with it. I mean, defying gravity is for a rabbit, no one else in the world really wanted to try that. And then to do it and then to engage in another risky behavior, to take some safety feature and make it into just do it for the hay of it, you know. Start jumping out of planes. Well, you know, it'd be good for warfare. We'll jump out of planes and survive other white rabbit enemies. it's crazy behavior. But when you sit back and look at it, we do ridiculous things that most of the listeners, everyone listening to this, the average white rabbit assumes is normal in the animal kingdom and is not normal. It is not normal behavior to invent a plane. It is not normal behavior to fly through the air and then start jumping out of it. It's really abnormal. When you look at it from a perspective of a rabbit's perspective, it is radically different. So we're dealing with a paradox. We have a rabbit that defies nature, that tends to engage in risky behavior by nature. Our natural behavior that you take for granted every day is incredibly risky. I was watching an episode, and you can see these episodes all the time. These white rabbits are swimming around with giant white sharks. But they want to do it safely, so they invent themselves a shark cage. They invent a shark cage so they can get in the water and observe them. No other rabbit in the history of this planet has ever thought to do something so ridiculous. I mean, being in a boat is one thing. Looking at a big fish in a boat is one thing. Getting in the water with one is pretty risky behavior. Deciding you're going to build a cage to do it safely is it's very white rabbitish. But to most rabbits, we seem absolutely positively nuts. But again, we engage in very risky behavior. Our whole entire culture is based on it. So much so that we don't really even fathom how risky it is for a bunch of rabbits to say, you know what, we're going to get in this tin can called a space shuttle, and we're going to strap it to a bunch of bombs, and we're going to light off these bombs in some type of succession and use it as fuel, and we're going to zoom all the way to the moon just to walk around, get some rocks, and talk to you. That's pretty outrageous behavior. It's very risky behavior. I don't know. But we engage in very risky behavior. We defy odds. On National Geographic Channel, I want to say, or maybe it's the Green Channel, I don't know, they got dozens of these now, and I have about 500 channels these days. But I was watching this one guy, and I never seen him before. He's some blonde white rabbit. And he spent several years living all summer in Alaska with the bears. He's living with the grizzlies. This white rabbit is living with the grizzlies. He was a bear expert, became a bear expert, knew all about them. Actually, made several different important discoveries, odd discoveries about them or whatever, but he became an expert in bears. And I'm watching this guy knows all about bears. He has them under control. I mean, not really under control, but I mean, he's living in a tent in their area. They leave him alone. He goes and studies them, sets up a camera and talks to them, and talks to all the white rabbits, because that's the only one crazy enough to watch this guy. So I'm watching this guy, and you realize how ridiculous this type of behavior is. Risky? Oh, just a little. He's living with grizzlies. He's living with grizzlies. And he continues to do this for several years, becomes famous for doing this. And then one morning, him and his girlfriend get ate by a grizzly. It's true. The bears ate him. And of course, the rationale behind the bears eating him is the bears were sick because normally bears don't eat humans. I guess that's true. I guess we'd all be dying a lot more if they did. It's kind of like when sharks eat a human. Well, he must have been sick. It's always the excuse. None of the white rabbits ever stop and think that the grizzly might have just been being a grizzly, or that the great white shark might have just been being a great white shark. You know, but they're always sick. You know, it's a sick bear. The bear was sick. It was old. It ate him. Well, maybe it's just being a grizzly. I don't know. That's what I always think. But these white rabbits kill me. They engage in behavior that defies all the odds, that breaks every rule, and we get away with it. Our whole culture is dependent on it. Our whole entire scientific discovery process is absurd, the things we do. Designing a plane is one thing. Designing a plane, flying in the air, is a whole nother. Getting up there and then deciding you're going to jump out of it to surprise the enemy in warfare, or however they first decided to start jumping out of planes, is incredibly risky. No one else on this planet would try that. No other animal would dare try something like that. But we try it. We do that. We do outrageous things. And other people, sure, other rabbits do it once we do it. But we do this, and we do it as a matter of racial nature. It's just our nature. So, for all I know, Charles Martel could have sat back and said, you know, this will go on for a couple decades, and then I'm going to jump up at the Battle of Tours. They're going to hit Burgundy, France. They're going to start getting into my wine presses or something, and then I'm going to annihilate them. And then I'll become famous white rabbit, and then I think he went around sticking it to the Saxons after that. We do incredibly risky behavior. For us to exist on this planet and to make it this far is actually a feat of nature, because we're white. You know, we kind of disappear into things very quickly. And we're going to go into some more of this stuff, but I apologize for any listeners. I didn't want to give you the impression that I thought Charles Martel lived to be 1,000 years old or anything like that. No. That's just an example I use. You got to hit the gates of Vienna. I could have said the gates of Paris. Now they're, of course, at the gates of, they're in Paris. They're in Vienna. They're in Oslo, Norway. They're in California. They're in everywhere. We got rabbits jumping up and down. And you got white rabbits white rabbits go through, three stages. We go through three stages getting upset. You know, you got the mildly aggravated rabbit is the first stage. The white rabbits start getting upset. They're mildly aggravated. We pretty much got every white rabbit on that planet, at least at that stage. Then the middle stage is fit to be tied rabbit. The white rabbit is just fit to be tied. They're very, very upset. Then you got the third stage, and that's full-blown AOF, area on fire rabbit. They don't care about dying. They don't care about anything else. They just got to annihilate things, and that's kind of what happened at the Battle of Tours and the Battle of Vienna. The Battle of Vienna, you know, you have the Habsburgs, who, in my opinion, you know, they were pretty much twiddling their thumbs there, and then they had von Stauffenberg, whatever his name was, he led that army, and then you have the famous Polish, the actual real royalty, Jan Sobieski, or Sobieski, however you want to pronounce that. I'm not good with Polish names, of course, another Eastern European name, but he did an amazing job at the Battle of Vienna. But, you know, it only takes one or two to get upset. A couple get upset after the American Revolution at the Indians, and it's, they wiped them out. Wiped them off face of the planet. That's my point. They go through the stage, and it takes a whole lot. It takes a whole lot to get them upset. It takes a whole lot to get them mildly aggravated. I mean, you got to pretty much wail on them. Some of these elements of royalty in the British Isles, you know, to even get something like William Wallace upset, it took like how many hundreds of years to get the Scots upset? I mean, they were wailing on them. Wailing on them. The average English person, most people don't know this, but the English royalty treated them like dirt, lower than dirt. They treated dirt better than them. Wailed on them for hundreds of years, and they still are. You know, William Wallace gets up one day and starts sticking it to him. You know, gets some elements together, who knows, some say Templars or whatever, and starts sticking it to him. Every once in a while, someone gets upset and makes history. They go AOF. But it takes a whole lot to get them upset. Other, you know, when you get in the combination of the pink rabbits or the Jew rabbits, Jew rabbit elites, with non-white rabbits, that combination pretty much is the combination for maximum irritation, probably among most white rabbits. That's about the only combination that can really quickly get it done, you know, over a couple decades, because European royalty, looking at it objectively, they'd sat there and wailed on them for hundreds of years to get them upset. And they do get upset, and they will make history on you. But, you know, it's a process. You got to go to the gates of Vienna with them, and it's hard work getting them upset, because they're pretty much either calm as cats or running around like Charles Martel the Hammer, ready to annihilate stuff. I mean, right now in America, I was looking at some of the, I remember when I first started getting ready to talk to you guys, I was looking at all these different racial groups. You have this group of Hammerskin Nation. The idea that you would have a white rabbit group that upset is pretty preposterous, because they don't get upset. We don't get upset. We take a lot of abuse historically. Tragic, but true. We're not destructive. We're extremely creative. We're not conflict oriented. You know, we've dominated conflicts because we dominate scarcity. But it, you know, now if you talked about getting a Charles Martel now in Europe, let's say Pooty Poot turned into Charles Martel the Hammer, we don't have, you know, he doesn't have some mace-like club. He has serious equipment. He could start laying, he could lay populations out permanently on this third rock from the sun. If you start talking about the Sons of Liberty getting hold of modern-day American weapons, just what we know about, just what you can read about, I'm not speculating on what they have, because we know how white rabbits are. You're not going to know about a stealth bomber until it's too late for you. But just speculating on the Sons of Liberty getting a modern weapon equipment, they're going to sail to London, and they're going to kill a bunch of rabbits, period, end of discussion. There's not going to be any Indian left on the planet, period. That's the way they operate when they hit those stages. So that's the kind of mentality I'm thinking. Because right now, you know, I've been asked several times, why won't they fight like the Mexicans? Why? Because they're not Mexicans. We are extremely unique in nature. Nothing else exhibits the type of risky behavior we exhibit decade after decade, hundreds of years after hundreds of years, and live to tell about it. We do crazy, death-defying things and make it normal, safe behavior. It is pretty safe to jump out of a plane with parachute on. Now, I've never done it. I'm not crazy about doing it, but it's safe. It's pretty safe to swim with sharks now with a cage. You're not supposed to be. It's not supposed to be safe behavior, but we make it safe. I'm guessing they could probably make living with bears safe somehow, with some kind of bear repellent. White rabbits are crazy. We're the wacky rabbits. So stop trying to say, you know, you can't compare us to anything else, because race is real. And we're going to continue this discussion in this one in question and answer, but I apologize for alluding to the fact that Charles Martel, and someone, a couple of people brought it to my attention that I alluded to the fact that it sounded like that Charles Martel was at the battle. He wasn't at the Battle of Vienna. I was just trying to make a broader point about what it takes to get him up. Horace, what do you think about this election? Election of some conservative named Brown in Massachusetts. Well, what's he talking about conserving? I mean, what's he talking about conserving? Do we know anything about this guy? Does he talk about this attempt to genocide against white rabbits? Nah, I haven't heard anything about that. Is he talking about, conserving anything? No, he's sitting next to Johnny McCain there. No, we're making so much progress here with these mulattoes. Why do we want to go ahead and elect white conservatives who aren't talking about conserving anything? He's sitting next to John McCain, who's got a little brown child. What's he talking about conserving? Haitians? Oh, no, we're making so much progress here. If I could hit a button and put nothing but mulattoes in, I'd do that. Why? He's pro-white genocide. I don't know anything about Brown. All my life I've been sold out by the Browns and the McCains, who are pro-white genocide. And they're white. I mean, we're getting somewhere. You know, in 1965, America tried to make itself, it's like China trying to make itself non-Chinese. In 2008, you get a mulatto, you're $100 trillion in the hole, and now, 2 years later that, they're all fit to be tied. They're all angry. They're all upset. Wow, we're getting somewhere. We're 3 inches from the gates of Vienna. Why do I want to quit now and go back to where we were before? Michelle Malkin, who's a Filipino woman, I think, wrote a piece, "Conservatives Beware of McCain Regression Syndrome." Thank you. Thank you. There's a Filipino woman saying it like it is. This brown guy, you don't know anything about him. He answered the iron question. Is he pro-white? Is he pro-white? What is he? What is he? What is he about? It doesn't mean anything to me. So until we get a final resolution, no, we're not making progress. The progress I have seen racially in this country over the last 2 years are amazing. Amazing. Front page of Drudge, we have an all-white basketball league down in Georgia starting. Oh, we're making progress. Why do we want to go back? Why? These mulattoes get it done. That's what it takes. It takes all these years, and then you got to overwhelm them visually. Now they're all upset. They're all fit to be tied. You know, they should have been upset before I was born, but they're white rabbits. You know, there's no point in getting upset at them. Race is real, and they got to go to the gates of Vienna. So once you start heading to the gates of Vienna, you push. No, if I could hit a button and elect only mulattoes who are pro-white genocide running around irritating white rabbits, I would do it. And it would get results very, very quickly. We have seen more racial progress in the last 24 months than ever. We've seen more white rabbits talk about race than any time in probably the history of our race. History of the indigenous white rabbits of Europe. Even in Germany. Yeah, in Germany they're talking about race. They're talking about race all over the place because of Taliban. Why are you overwhelming them visually? We're going to talk about that next because I was asked a question about propaganda. But you come back to a meme that race is real, and now you're overwhelming them visually. And Obama's policy, you know, he's nothing. His policies are nothing. He doesn't have any power to do anything other than irritate white rabbits. Well, that's what we want to do. He has power to do exactly what we want to do. McCain doesn't have any power to do that. All McCain's going to do is genocide us. You know, all these guys email me, how could you be so down on McCain and pro-Obama? I'm not pro-Obama, I'm pro-white. There's a difference there. I'm trying to get to home base. I want a rabbit hole. We got the whole top of the planet, and we don't have a home. And by any means necessary politically, we're going to do that. We've seen tremendous amount of progress. They're now fit to be tied. They're all upset. Wow, that's wonderful. Now we're getting somewhere. Yeah, why do I want to go back? I don't know what this brown guy's like. Now, if this brown guy stood up and said, you know what? Africans have 50-plus countries in the world. Africans have half the world's natural resources. Africans have the largest population in the world. Africans live with me as a minority, and I am a minority. There's not much more I can do for you other than make you president. So let's start talking about some long-term racial solutions. Well, I support him. I don't care. What's he talking about conserving? Haitians? Until you get a conservative talking about conserving white rabbits, we're back to square one. I don't want that. I don't want to go back. We're 3 inches from the gates of Vienna. Push. Come on, Turks. Go. I mean, I've never seen white rabbits this upset. This is getting good. Why do we want to go and wreck that? You go wreck that by electing these so-called conservatives? No. You think the old way. That old way doesn't work. Horace's way works. Race is real. There's no point in getting upset at white rabbits. You shove their head in it. That's what you do. Yes, that's what you do. That's what works for them. Now on to the next question. So to answer your... Oh, and I got to ask another question since we're on to politics. The American third position, I like that. It's time for that. Someone wrote me and said, is it too late for this? The fact that you said it's too late tells me it's just in time. No, it's wonderful because Kevin McDonald's there, and Kevin McDonald, Dr. McDonald, scares away the pink rabbits. It's good. It's good. He's like a big, he's like rat poison there. But that's good. But they're really talking about race. They're talking about long-term preservation of white rabbits from kind of American constitutional standpoint and all that kind of good stuff. Whatever. Wonderful. We need a white racial party to put either pressure on the Republicans or make the Republicans into the Whig party. Yeah, there was a Whig party in America. Parties can go extinct in America. I don't know the full name of the party. Bob knows all about that stuff, but the American third position is good. I like the name. I like the acronym, A3P. Now, I'm a fifth positionist, but to get to be a fifth position, you got to be the third position. It says a lot. I like the people behind it. I like someone behind it. I think it's good. It's something that can spread like wildfire, or at least put pressure on the Republicans or put them out of business, which is fine with me. Now, if you want to elect some, if Brown took all the positions of American third position, talking about conserving white rabbits, well, we'd be somewhere, but that doesn't work for me. So what does it say? It says white people are getting upset. Well, that's good. That's good. 1965, China tries to make itself non-Chinese. America's 90% European, and they tried to make themselves non-European without a vote. Now, they're now upset that they didn't get a vote back then, but they weren't upset then because they're white rabbits. You got to hit the gates of Vienna. So, all the way to 2008, they're $100 trillion in the hole, and they elect a mulatto. Now they're upset. 2010, they're fit to be tied rabbits. Well, whatever works for them. Whatever works. We're going to do it. But no, if I could hit a button and get a bunch of Talibamas with all these mulattoes that drive the white rabbits crazy, he's pro-white genocide. Fine. There ain't nothing wrong with a mulatto being pro-white genocide because he's going to run it down your throat every day and irritate you and all that kind of stuff. John McCain's pro-white genocide, too. He gets away with murder. Obama can't make a move without pissing off white rabbits. Well, that's fantastic. I've been waiting my whole entire life for him. It's good. No, it's just now getting fun. And the American third position is good. It's a wonderful acronym, A3P. It sounds radical. Third position is the gateway to the fifth position. Yes, the end of wordism. I like that. And no-ism, just white. White noise. Yes, but no, I have no problems with the A3P. I think it's right on time because you never know what may happen, and all of a sudden A3P party rules America or something. Strange things can happen at this time in the calendar. So I think it is prime time. And the name says everything. You know, there's been plenty of third parties with similar type positions. But the names and some of the parties behind it are solid whites, are solid European. The third position is a European. I like it. I like everything about it. I like the A3P. I think it's very catchy. So I think it's fine. I'm not a member, but everything I've seen thus far, it's perfect timing for that. It's never too late. And if a white rabbit thinks it's too late, you're right on time. Because hope is lost. Yes. They said that 3 inches before they hit the gates of Vienna. And then all hope was anything but lost. But they're white rabbits. What do you want to do with it? Race is real. You just got to understand it and push, 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 little Turks. But let's go on to the next question. Next question is about, Horace, you say Russians are white nationalists. Well, I never really said that. I said they do some interesting things. The average American skinhead, whatever, he thinks the Russians have it together because they got a lot of skinheads running around and they're allowed to defend themselves. Well, probably the most aggressive Europeans on planet would be in America. Some of the elements in America, the next aggressive, if you allowed them, would probably be in Northern Europe. Russia would probably be third on the list. They're just kind of what you see is what you get. Russia falls back into kind of old-style tribalism. That's what their skinheads are really about. But they are coming along. Russia at the top is very interesting. They're Russian nationalists. But let me explain to you what that means, because most Americans don't understand Samizdat mindset. And that's what I call it. Samizdat was like a political opposition paper or something. Let's look it up really quick. I'll be accurate so all these people don't email me with my inaccuracies. Samizdat. That's what I call it. Samizdat mindset is what I always go into. It was a key dissident activity and publications by hand and passed documents from reader to reader. In other words, it was seditious stuff that they were passing around from reader to reader. And you know, it's I call it a Samizdat mindset, but let me explain it to you. Whenever anyone asks me what I am, I said I'm an American. And you know, I refer to everyone non-white as US citizens. You know, it they're constantly differentiating. I'm an American, they're US citizens. This is a Russian type of attitude that I adopted. It works in a closed society. When whites are in a closed society, they adopt that. If you know, a friend of mine was in Ireland of all places. And these people in front of them in line, these little Irish rabbits, were bitching about the immigrants, non-white immigrants. And my friend was there working, and he was on a worker's visa or whatever type of worker they have there. And he said, well, and they asked him what he thought. And he said, well, I'm a foreigner here working. And he was just honest with him. He said, a foreigner. He said, well, yeah, but you're not an immigrant. You're white. Well, they're coming into a Samizdat mindset. That's what I call it. That's patented white rabbit phraseology. And it's funny when they get in that mindset, but I always do that in America. I'm an American, they're U.S. citizen. What's the difference? I'm white. I could burn it down and rebuild it. Because I built it to begin with. That's the difference. But in Russia, the reason I'm telling you this is they say the Russian nationalists, but you have to understand the Samizdat mindset. What your enemy understands is they believe that they're Russian nationalists and only Europeans can be Russian. And so when you get into, you forget about them, look at the think tanks that support them. You know, the ones that make decisions in Russia all have that mindset. They don't imagine Russia without Europeans running things and being the majority. That's what's important. So don't look at what they say, look at what they do. All my life in somewhere like America, you look at these conservatives say things. I don't look at them saying anything. I look at what they do. But you have to kind of understand a samizdat mindset in Russia because the think tanks operate that way. They're Russian nationalists. But they're not telling you who can be a Russian. And I don't care what they say. I care about what they do. If you say Russian nationalism, I know what they're saying. I know how they think. And then they're letting little skinheads do whatever they want to do to defend themselves, which is what they should be doing. Probably not enough, but there's some negative conditioning going on. They're playing some games. I told you we're reaching long-term solutions, but they've done some funny stuff. But no, he's a Russian nationalist. So I can be an American nationalism, but only whites can be American. So it's a mindset. It whites, for some reason, in a closed society, take on a mindset of trying to differentiate themselves. I saw my friend demonstrated this in Ireland. In Germany, it's like, no, I'm German. They're EU citizens. Well, you got to do something to keep yourself sane. Other than that, I mean, if we're all going to be Americans, and I'm not American, I'm white, but I always differentiate. That is what the Russian is, samizdat. It's a closed society, and you undermine it by doing little things like that. And white rabbits naturally do that because we're pretty creative. But that's what you have to understand. You got to keep that in mind. I never said that he's necessarily white nationalism, but you got to understand samizdat mindset. They play with words. Like in China, a lot of comment, Chinese say they're not communists. They're playing with words. But I don't care if you play with words. We'll get through this by any means necessary. Say I'm an American. They're just U.S. citizens. You know, you got to do something to differentiate yourself to keep you and your family sane. It is what it is. It is a closed society. A closed society is a society where the people that run things say they own the truth. In this case, they own the truth on race in white rabbit holes. They own the truth that race doesn't exist only in white rabbit holes. They own the race truth that diversity is supreme and only white rabbit holes. It's a closed society. And it's coming down. But that is that on that particular issue. Hopefully you understand that. Let's see here. Horace, you say white women aren't brainwashable. Well, I never necessarily said that. You gotta listen to the whole program. What I did say was that the numbers don't work. Well, what happens with women is that women are extremely fashionable. Some are naive, some are brainwashed, and some are fashionable. They're not as brainwashed as you think they are. They're just fashionable. Let me give you an example. Most of the listeners, male and female alike, will see a woman, any woman of all races. The example I used was an Indian woman sitting in a restaurant, and she gets upset at her Indian husband in like, I think it was India, got upset and was upset that he said something about the gay waiter. And he says, how many gay people do you know? Well, she's just being fashionable. She's falling for political correctness. The challenge comes in is that she doesn't have any gay friends. Okay, so now let's go over to Anglosphere. Anglosphere, they advertise Louis Vuitton, but the numbers, they're just not buying Louis Vuitton because they're lying to you. They're fashionable. I remember going to a wedding, and I went to a wedding. This is typical. This is typical woman rabbit behaviors, especially white lady rabbits. And I was at a wedding, and this girl said, oh, that dress is beautiful. No, I didn't pay any attention. What do I know about dresses? I maybe it was okay. I don't know. I really wasn't paying attention. Then, on the way home, she's bitching about the dress. She said, that dress was so ugly. Now, here she just told this woman her dress was beautiful, but now she says her dress is ugly. Well, why didn't you tell her that? Well, I can't say that there. I'm being fashionable. Is that political correctness? That's not even political correctness. They're just lying. That's the problem. If you're advertising Louis Vuitton black rabbits, but they're not buying black rabbits in big numbers, it's because they're lying to you. Sure, they'll watch them on TV for the same reason we'll watch the bears on TV. It's true. We love watching other animals. It's true. But they're not buying them in any great numbers. In big enough numbers, there's enough here to destroy Anglosphere. But that was that way before I was born. I'm just simply giving you the facts. So there's some that are naive. There's some that are just plain lie. But there's a large percentage of them that are just plain lie to you. So what we consider political correctness, a lot of times they might consider fashionable. And this has given social engineers a fit. It's very difficult to deal with. because you don't know what they're telling you the truth or not. That's what I was talking about. I didn't say they weren't brainwashable. They're fashionable. They're a little bit different than us. Men and women are different. Well, white lady rabbits are very difficult to figure out. They know that if a black rabbit makes, like, I believe it's 6 times the amount of money as a white rabbit, that he could probably get a black. The problem is that you got a failing economy, and this stuff just was supposed to work decades ago, and it just doesn't work. It doesn't work. It destroys inner cities. It's destroyed London. It's destroyed Anglosphere, but it hasn't destroyed our race. That's my whole entire point. The stuff doesn't work. It goes against nature. And anyone that's been around a lady rabbit knows they have no problems lying to be fashionable. Yeah, but that's what I was saying. Hopefully you understand that. And I think I was pretty clear on that. But that's okay. You know, we can have differences of opinion. And we're going to get into some differences of opinion because I finally got an email at Detractor. He's a detractor on some issues, but I think... but I'm not going to try to bring him around, but I think it's good to have detractors. And I will call him down on his fur, Robert. And Robert is down on his fur. Yeah, he thinks Asians are superior, which is kind of funny. But there's a lot of white nationals like him, like him out there. And I'm gonna go over down on his fur, Robert, and all down on his fur, Robert stuff. But before I do that, there's been some nice write-ups about old Horace and certain blogs and whatnot. And over at Whitaker Online, there's some different write-ups about us, or write-ups about the people over at WhitakerOnline.org, and that's really nice. But I was described as clearly, deeply subversive. Well, it's not that subversive. The first one can seem subversive. The first couple can seem subversive, but I think in a unique way. Over at WhitakerOnline.org, if you stay there for any length of time, if you listen to this Porch Talks, you're going to start thinking in a unique way. The way is legitimate white rabbit thinking. We really believe race is real, and I try to achieve some consistency in that. And so, you know, when you come into the first 24 of the series, the first couple can seem really unique, really different, but you have to go somewhere with it. You've got to listen to so many of them to understand that it's not all that subversive, other than it's a radical different approach and a radical different way of thinking. We don't get upset at white rabbits. We just want to hit them with the right carrot to get them to do the right thing. When you understand race is real, you understand that they're not Mexicans, they're not black rabbits, they're white rabbits. You got to go through a particular phase with them, and they'll drive you wild. You can speed things up if you control the media. Upset, and I apologize for that. But we'll continue this discussion. One of the challenges of doing a podcast from scratch or something along these lines, where we're just not talking about fluff, but we're talking about some in some ways heavy duty concepts and some very, very controversial. You know, the first thing I did was I got a hold of who I wanted to talk to. And there's one group I think most white nationalists that listen to me can agree on. They're called Patriot Tards, or that's what they call themselves. They go to like the Tea Party rallies. They're very vocal. They're not bad people. But most white nationalists would probably say we should get them involved on some level, but they don't really know how to talk to them. Well, that was the group I was targeting. And sure enough, the artist, one of the artists you see that does all the work for us, he's a Patriot Tard. He does, you know, he did like, he does little sculptures, you know, those sculptures like Disney goes to do figurines and whatnot. Well, they hire a sculptor to do that little figurine, and then they go ahead and make that little plastic figurine, that type of thing. But he's a first-rate artist, but he's a former Patriot Tard. And these guys are out there. But that was my target. But to do that, of course, you got to know what they want to hear. Because obviously, you know, unless you got the research, you don't really know what they're looking at. And maybe you've noticed one of these patriotic elements went off and he blew up. He walked into a mail. Maybe it was a police station or something. I don't know. He blew away a bunch of people, and they were talking about what he was web surfing. That he was web surfing all these different patriotic websites like the Alex Jones InfoWars, which is a big one for them. But he's also on Stormfront. Maybe you noticed that, and some other white nationalist or racialist type thing. Well, I got a hold of some research on that, and I knew what they were looking at, and that's how I designed this. I am not a fantasy rabbit. There are two types of rabbits. There are fantasy rabbits and there are skeptic white rabbits. White nationalists are by and large skeptic. Racialists by and large are big skeptics. Then there's degrees. There's just a light fantasy rabbit and a heavy fantasy rabbit. And then there's a light skeptic rabbit and a heavy-duty skeptic rabbit. I used to be a heavy-duty skeptic rabbit. I used to have to see things. Then I learned about science. I learned that we don't naturally see things. And I learned how these elite groups operated, and they didn't just start operating that way yesterday or 2000 or even 1500 years ago, or in my opinion, even 2000 years ago. We've been in the dark a long, long time. Most of the things we see in front of us now have been going on a long, long time because, one, race is real. And I'm going to stay on this point, but or come back to it. But I am by nature a skeptic. I've eased up into light skeptic because typically anymore, if I think a baseball bat, you know, a skeptic is the type. I was the type of guy that I had to see a baseball bat to believe it. Well, there's a flaw there because we don't see anything. We see light reflecting off what we believe to be things, and we are heavily influenced by certain types of light. White rabbits are, especially white rabbits. All human beings are, or all rabbits are, but white rabbits are very, very light-oriented. We are very visually oriented, and different parties know this. But we don't see things. We see light reflecting off what we believe to be things. So it makes us vulnerable to be fooled. That's where you get terms like blinded by the light. Our enemy, one sector of our enemy, when they walked into ancient Egypt, they did nothing, and the Egypt was pretty much open to teach astrology and all kinds of interesting things that I die to learn to this day. They taught them way too much. You know, but anytime you hear uses of light and light onto the nations and stuff like that, but there's many different dark qualities of light. That's where you get the term blinded by the light. But when you go into these type of topics, green goddess type topics, I understand they're controversial. My next letter I'm reading, he doesn't like any of it. I understand that certain parties aren't going to want to hear that. They just want to hear about white rabbits and what I have to say about race. The reason I hit those topics is because this Tea Party, these patriotards, that's all they're looking at. They're looking at World War II, radical different reversions of history in World War II, and that's happening right in front of our faces. And they're also looking at some pretty stuff that kind of floored me in these areas. But I'm taking everything from a racial bent. But there are the skeptic rabbits. There's a heavy-duty skeptic rabbit, and they got to get hit with baseball bats, basically, to believe there's a baseball bat. I understand that. I used to be one of them. I've leaned up into what I would say a moderate skeptic. I know baseball bats exist in this area, and these baseball bats coming at us in the next, I don't know, it's not months, it's days. It could be so many days. It could start definitely this spring. These baseball bats are going to get bigger and bigger. I just don't know how big they're going to be. But I've already warned you on that. I'm the type of guy that if there's smoke, I know there's going to be fire because I've been burned on these stuff before. One of the disadvantages is a generational disadvantage. And the letter I'm going to read from down on his fur, Robert, and Robert's not a bad guy. He's just a little down on his fur, and he went on a rant. And the reason I'm going to read this letter, because I think he's serious and legitimate. He ends the letter, if you read this far, thanks for reading and your patience. I know I don't have anything constructive to offer about the mess we're in, but I guess I just wrote this to vent my demoralization, as you call it. I'll keep listening to your podcast. And I think that, you know, everyone's got their own outlet, and sometimes email and online forums are the only outlets a white rabbit has. So I understand that. I don't, there is a generational problem here. And the generational problem is that the Generation X, Y, and the Baby Boomers, well, the Baby Boomers were just coming out, but post-Hitler, this stuff went underneath the rug. The challenge when you get into Green Goddess stuff and legacy civilizations, just because it went underneath the rug doesn't mean someone's not going to take the rug out from underneath you. And all that stuff is going to be there larger than life. That was the problem I got into, that I assumed that was just stuff that we left behind, but that it didn't go anywhere. It didn't go anywhere. They went a lot deeper than anyone thought, and they found out all kinds of stuff. I just don't know what. I can only point at the direction. You know, there's a saying, when it comes to World War II, I've always asked some of the wise men what they found, and they said, well, you know, or did they find something? And you know, the only response I could ever get was, did they ever? And, you know, those that know don't say, and those that say don't know. I have no problems with saying I don't know and pointing you in a direction if that's what you're interested in. And I've never done anything but that. I don't try to represent. I am a skeptic by nature. But I know that if there's smoke there, there's fire. And so I'm going to read this letter, and I'm going to talk about a few things, and I'm going to cut off and come back and whatnot, because I think it's all around good letter for skeptics, even heavy duty skeptics. But you should be aware, anytime you see smoke in any type of thing that could go racial overnight, there's probably going to be fire there. And everything we're seeing in Western civilization, all across white rabbit societies, have been there a long, long time. For instance, right now, if we were to walk out 3,000 years and America were to brown out, how would you know any Europeans were here? 3,000 years from now, you know, you could point at the media in 2010 and say, well, I don't see any white rabbits there. 3,000 years from now, or 4,000 years from now, or 5,000 years from now, it would be damn near impossible. You could say, you know, because look across the planet. You have all these white rabbits. We're not all speaking Chinese or Japanese. We're all speaking different languages. White rabbits will leave from America, go to France, speak French, and be there for eternity. Chinese rabbits go away from China, and they're still going to speak Chinese, basically. We are radically different. We have all these different countries speaking all these different languages, but by and large, they're white rabbits. You need to think about that, because that's the same thing you would have saw 3,000 years ago. And yeah, 5,000 years from now, you could argue, well, Americans weren't white; they were mixed. You could make all kinds of ridiculous arguments based on just the media you would be watching, or just based on the statues. You know, none of our statues are painted. In Egypt, in Greece, in Rome, all the statues were painted. That's a fact I never knew. None of our statues anymore are painted. The Sphinx at one time was painted. We used to paint everything. We're all into these vibrant colors. You know, I was reminded of that when I saw one of these, I think it was Icelandic city, where they had all these radical different colored houses. And that's, we used to do that. The Colosseum in Rome used to be painted. Old Bob and some of the wise men are full of all kinds of stuff that I never knew. But this stuff is not in the history books. When it comes down to legacy civilizations, that stuff went out the window after World War II. The social engineering schools came in, and when they came in, they started cleaning up, and then by the late 60s, the stuff was gone. Doesn't mean it's not there. It's just gone. But everything you see to be true now was true 3,000 years from now, 3,000 years ago, and it'll be true 3,000 years from now, because race is real. We are always doing something radically different. Right now, I have listeners in France that have a tough time understanding what I'm saying, although they speak perfect English, because there's cultural differences, and there's sayings in America that you might not pick up elsewhere. There's sayings in Britain that you're not going to pick up if you're not British. You're not going to be in on it. There's sayings in German that even if someone that can speak some German are not going to be up on. White rabbits are radically different. We are unlike anything on this planet. When you look at the ancient shamanic tradition, we've heard terms like the Chaldees of Babylon, you know, who made it all the way over to Ireland at one time. You have the infamous ominous priests in Egypt. You have the famous Druids. You know, Bard Ovad, Druid, that type of thing. What you don't understand is what you see in Christianity today. In Christianity, if someone were to arrive here from another planet, like some little alien, they'd say, well, it's obvious, Horace, that Catholics are different than Baptists. That's a different religion, and these Orthodox Russians are all practicing different religions. I say, no, they're just white rabbits. They're all tied to the same thread. And you could argue that the evangelicals were practicing a totally different religion than the Catholics. Couldn't you? But that's because race is real. We are always doing something unique and different. But they're all tied to one thread. They're all tied to the same thread. Isn't that correct? I mean, they're all Christians. They're all different, but they're all Christians. It is fundamental to our nature. If you look just across Northern Europe, if you look just at the strain of Northern Europe, just the Nordic strains, they are all radically different. But they're all the same. That is the way we operate. That will always be our nature. We can do 10 different civilizations, all be white, all be radically different, all have radical different sayings and symbolism, but all be white. White rabbits, you know, what you're doing, figuring out white rabbit future is a lot of fun. It's also a big challenge. Because really, what you're trying to do is speculate on a rabbit, what a rabbit might do when it's capable of doing anything. How do you speculate on what may have been going on or what might be going on 3,000 years from now or 3,000 years ago when you have a rabbit that'll build a plane and jump out of it? It's very difficult to speculate on what that rabbit may do. You could go in a direction, but that's about it. But let's get to Robert's letter, and we'll read it. But again, in reading it, keep in mind that he's just venting his demoralization. But he has some points that I don't necessarily disagree with. But when it comes to what really happened in World War II, when it comes to the history of our race, when it comes to our technological capabilities, there are certain traits that they dance in front of you all day long, and you have to understand that race is real. You have to constantly come back and try to be consistent in your thinking, and this society is very difficult because you have a couple generations that have been inundated with stuff from social engineering schools that have done their homework on us. We have, it's very difficult to think in racial terms in a society that's just bombards you with everything but. Let's see here. Hi, Horace. I came across your site and have been listening to all your sound clips. I know your heart's in the right place, but some of the stuff you say is probably to encourage whites to take heart and have hope, but much of it rings hollow. Firstly, the Aryan mysticism, Green Goddess stuff sounds like hokum. I've read Arctos and Evola, and that whole genre is highly speculative and loaded with wishful thinking. Well, in your opinion, it's highly speculative and loaded with wishful thinking. It's always just your opinion, Robert. When it comes to white rabbits, this type of thing, it can be speculative, but so can be building planes and jumping out of them. You really got to watch it. Let's see. The stuff about magical ray of light occurring during astral alignment in 1685 and 2012 sounds like the story that only gullible whites would believe. I think what's going on here is whites don't really have an ancient civilization to match the antiquity of Aryan, Egypt, Sumer, or ancient India, so there's an urge to discover an ancient legacy of an Aryan super neverland to compete with them. You allude to this type of sort of slant in your show about Babylon and Egypt were legacy civilizations. I can tell you, I used to believe this, but then visited Egypt myself. The oldest pyramids at Saqqara and Giza don't have any white people on those frescoes. Whites probably started infiltrating and making an impact during the New Kingdom around 1500 BC. The Aryans who invaded Harappan India in 1500 BC were culturally not that more different than the primitive nomadic Hyksos and Israelites. They absorbed more culture than the cultures they invaded and gave just warlike nomads with whoop-de-doo sky gods, whoop-de-doo. The Egyptians and Sumerians were Aryan motif, just sounds like the reversal of black Afrocentrism. Now, down on his for Robert says a whole lot, and a whole lot that basically sounds like social engineering schools post-1950. One of the challenges here is that you're looking at legacy civilizations, like America is a legacy civilization. One of the challenges here is that the elites in Europe believe one thing. They believe that there's two strains. I'm going to tell you what they believe. I don't care who believes it or not. I'm telling you what they believe. The elites in Europe believe that there are two strains. In America, they believe there are two strains. One strain goes from ancient Egypt into Greece, into Rome, into the British Isles. The other strain goes from Babylon into Sumer, into Germany, into mainland Europe. Those are the two ones, and that's what they believe. They have tons of biological proof. They have in other words, they have genetic testing. They're going to hit you with it all at once. They have all kinds of stuff coming. And that's why they have so many artifacts. When it comes down to 1685 and 2012, Robert, you need to understand that this is just it's basically astrophysics to some extent. When you have, This planet, this solar system, spends 12,500 years going away from the center of the galaxy, and we spend 12,500 years going into. In 1685, we started coming back into the center, back into the crossover point, which is 2012. For 12,500 years, we'll be going back into, and there are many different terms for it. The Great Central Sun, the Dove Sun, the Black Sun, there's all different kinds of names. But in 1685, when we started, these are prime dates, when we started moving back into it, our race, for whatever reason, awoken. And that awakening will be on a conscious level, will not be on a physical or mental level. You're not dealing with brain, you're dealing with mind, consciousness. And this is something I'm going to come back to because I think it's important for racialists. It's the big topic behind the scene is consciousness. And it's been that way since guess when? post-World War II. That's where the LSD research comes from and everything else, consciousness. Our consciousness is going to be radically different than others. But if race is real, that may be the missing link, and I'm going to go into this in a bit. So I'm talking to you about what the elites believe. Now, you could say that's all hokum and they don't believe it for no reason or whatever else, but let's talk about a staple of Schwaller de Lubitz, or I don't even know how to pronounce his name. It's D-E-L-U-B-I-C-Z. And his work is basically, he was around from 1887 to 1961. And I'm going to read you what he said. And this was one of the heavyweights. But there is some question marks in regards to Egypt and Sumer. I believe, personally, what you see now in America, imagine a big disaster came, knocked us out, and we had to travel and then take over something that was heavily destroyed like China. We took it over, and then we made it our own. I believe that could have happened in the Middle East. But let's redo what he said. After 2 decades of study, mainly on the site at the Temple of Luxor, de Lubitz was able to prove that all is accepted as dogma concerning Egypt and ancient civilization in general is wrong or hopelessly inadequate. His work overthrows or undermines virtually every current cherished belief regarding man's history and the evolution of civilization. Egyptian science, medicine, mathematics, and astronomy were all of an exceptional higher caliber of refinement and sophistication than modern scholars will acknowledge. The whole of Egyptian civilization was based upon a complete and precise understanding of universal laws. And this profound understanding manifested itself in a consistent, coherent, interrelated system that fused science, art, religion into single organic unity. In other words, it was exactly the opposite of what we find in the world today. Let's see here. How does a complex civilization spring full-blown into being? Look at a 1905 automobile and compare it to a modern one. There is no mistaking the process of development, but in Egypt there are no parallels. Everything is right there at the start. The answer to this mystery, of course, is obvious, but because it is repellent to the prevailing caste of modern thinking, it is seldom considered. Egyptian civilization was not a development, it was a legacy. Thus, the very existence of ancient Egypt civilization points to something earlier and even more sophisticated. If the coherence, complete, and interrelated system of science, religion, and art and philosophy of Egypt was not developed by the Egyptians, but inherited and perhaps reformulated and redesigned to suit their needs, that system came from a prior civilization possessing a higher order of knowledge. In other words, this alternative brings up the old question, legacy civilizations. You can believe what you want, but that's the type of thing the elites believe. And that means the Queen of England, so on and so forth, etc. And they have a lot more power than you think, and that's what they believe. You could argue that they're all miffed or idiots, but they have tons of Egyptian artifacts. They have that stuff all day long. One of the challenges with Egypt is a challenge you're going to have if you looked at America 5,000 years in the future. Egypt was very, very unique. I don't believe they came in and made it from scratch. I think there's other things going on that we haven't accounted for. That's my gut feeling. It has everything to do with legacy civilizations and islands going down. But you got to know what they mean by islands going down. You know, that the Hopi Indians in North America believe they live on Turtle Island, but they're talking about all of North America. So we say island, we assume some island in the sea. Doesn't necessarily mean that in Egypt. And when you talk about Egypt, you got other challenges. One of the challenges is, you mentioned you saw that the things on the pyramids. Well, a lot of that was redone. Lots of that stuff has been redone, refitted, all kinds of other goofy stuff going on. Nothing's painted, but what is painted? Like, the males are painted red. The Egyptians painted all males red. They weren't red. I mean, they've done testing on some of the mummies. They've probably done testing on all the original mummies and whatnot. Genetic testing. So much so that all the speculation over them being black, you might remember that Zahari Hawass, the head of the Egyptian, the one that's always on Discovery Channel, he came out and said that none of them were African. They were Egypt. They were mixed. And, of course, that's part of our enemy's New World Order. They want everything mixed. But what were they prior to that? Well, they know that they were by and large European, but I don't believe they built everything from scratch. I think there's something more interesting going on. But you have to know their symbolism, right? You have to know that all the males were painted red no matter what. In fact, to this day, the symbol for males is Mars, the red planet, and that supposedly comes from there. But that is speculative. I'll give you that. It's speculative. But if you understand that race is real, when you look back at Sumer, when you look back at what's going on there, you see radical differences in civilization, just like you'd see now, and you have massive disasters happening across this planet. There is no society on this planet that doesn't talk about white people showing up after a disaster. And we'll continue. I'll continue to read his letter and to talk about it. But your statements are fair to some extent. But I think you're ignoring what you see in front of your face right now today. Just because there's red or dark brown people on the pyramids doesn't mean there weren't whites there. Again, we don't know what's been changed there. We don't know what's been fooled there. Nothing's painted. The Sphinx isn't painted. I know for a fact it was painted at one time. Everything's in a rapid state of decay. But they have done a lot of genetic testing on the mummies, and a lot of what we know about it has proven to be a lie. In fact, there was a lie about the slaves built the pyramids. Well, it came out that they were not slaves. And there's more and more coming out, but the people that run things believe that we descend from these legacy civilizations. I'm interested in who built them, where they came from, and that type of thing. But that's what they believe. Whether you accept it or not, I don't know. Nor do I care, because like I said, there's baseball bats coming, and there's smoke, there's fire on this subject. But we're gonna continue on this, and I'll save my favorite whoop-de-doo sky gods. I'll talk about that a little bit here in a bit. I'm going to go over a couple more things. I'm going to end 27 so this doesn't go too long, and then I'll just split the rest out and make it 28. One of the challenges when it comes to light is that saying that light doesn't affect us in funny ways kind of goes against all the conventional wisdom we know. I mean, we rub on suntan lotion and suntan oil to keep out UV rays because UV rays, you know, we can get burned. We don't want to get burned. White rabbits tend to get burned, but we don't necessarily see the sun that burns us. You can be walking around outside and not know you're getting burned and walk in and be scorched. So light is a very funny subject matter. It's not something I'm good at talking about, but it's interesting stuff. And when it comes down to the pyramids or the stuff Robert calls Hokum, the pyramid experiments, it all comes out of Russia because Russia had a lot of land. They were doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And one of these guys, I think his name was Joe Parr, was one of the first to get a hold of the research and start translating it and start doing some other stuff of his own. He's a type of... I don't know if he's type of a physicist or whatever, but very controversial stuff, and it was very controversial when it came out. But that's the stuff that Joseph P. Farrell is quoting, and I'll quote you. I'll actually read you one segment from one of his books. The time of the year that these strange events happened is from December 13th through 16th. After 13 years of continuous recorded data, Joe thinks he has discovered why. At that time, the Earth passes through the Sun and the constellation Orion. Joe has discovered a continuous energy conduit or stream between the Sun and Orion. The conduit is composed of neutrino particles coming from the Sun and moving in the direction of the constellation Orion. It is important to realize that we do not know if they are actually going to Orion or that is the direction of the particle conduit. In addition, if you continue the line back through the Sun and onward into the opposite direction, you will arrive at the center of the galaxy. You know, there's all kinds of bizarre things coming out about the Russian research in regards to the pyramid-type structure and what it can do. I have a listener, I call him the Flame of the East. He's a Japanese. He's in Japan. And he's pretty bright on this type of thing. And he had written me, telling me, in regards to this, that, you know, when it comes to this type of thing, the Asians want to read all about it. And he wrote me a letter, Robert, asked me if I knew that the Emperor of Japan has a full-time astrologer. And we're not talking about someone reading his horoscope necessarily. And I would tell him in this broadcast that yes, they all do. They all are into astrology on a big level. And he asked me if I believe there was an ancient science placed on it. Most likely, I'm guessing, but we'll know everything soon enough. But when it comes to the structure, the pyramid structure, it does. There's all kinds of different wild theories on it. But most of the more interesting stuff is the science that comes out of Russia, and that's happened since the fall of communism. But when it comes to light, either you understand that light has an effect on us, and we don't fully know everything, or you don't. And we've done a whole lot since 1685 for nomads with whoop-de-doo sky gods. We've done a whole lot. So much so that most whites take it for granted. Most of the world doesn't. That's why they want to live with us. And we'll continue this conversation on 28, and 28 will be out right after this one.
This is the end of another episode of Follow the White Rabbit. Follow the White Rabbit, again, is a game that will teach you practical politics. Practical politics is practical because it is non-voting, which makes it very, very practical. Conventional politics is voting politics or rule-based politics. And the ultimate, of course, is full-spectrum practical politics, engaging and taking down an opponent, a system, by any means necessary, within the rules, within the law, but never breaking them. And this is the end of another episode of Follow the White Rabbit. Thank you for listening.